We want to talk in this session in particular about sin, evil, and salvation. This is a big area of the Old Testament in a lot of different ways because the Israelites experienced a lot of issues. The country of Israel. Today, it's still somewhat this way, but in ancient times, Israel was the crossroads of the ancient world. There were three main centers of both military and economic activity. One was called Mesopotamia, which is where Assyria and Babylon were, and today we call that country Iraq. Another was Egypt, which we still call Egypt. And another was in the area of modern-day Turkey and Greece, and eventually Rome. And all land and trade traffic mostly went through the country of Israel because it offered the easiest passage from the interior to the coast. And within Israel, the most common place for that passage was through the land known as the Jezreel Valley. And so Israel was sort of in this situation where it was easy for one nation or another to want to dominate Israel because Israel represented the economic strength or lack thereof for any country around Israel. When David became king, Israel was dominated by the Philistines. The Philistines were a relatively minor group of people in the ancient world. And when Israel was being dominated by the Philistines, it demonstrates how utterly weak and unorganized was the Israelite world. And when David, after 7 years, had conquered the Philistines, and that's literally what basically happened, then he moved the capital from Hebron, which was in the heart of Judah, to Jerusalem, which was on the border between the southern kingdom of Judah and the northern kingdom, which represented all the other tribes. And he made Jerusalem his capital. And during the time of David, Israel went from being this kind of poverty-stricken backcountry to becoming the foremost nation of that region of the world at that time, and to becoming a very, very prosperous kingdom, which his son Solomon not only continued, but added to. And even in the archaeological record, when archaeologists are digging down one layer and then another layer and then another layer, they can actually sometimes pinpoint the layer that represents the occupation of that city when David became king, because there is this sudden jump in the prosperity represented by the pottery and all of the physical remains that they find dated to the time of David. And so there was this tremendous change that took place. But when Israel became strong under David and Solomon, and dominated the economic and military world of their day, You have to also understand Egypt was sitting there just looking and saying, I can't wait till I take control. Assyria, which was the major kingdom in Mesopotamia then, was looking and saying, I can't wait till I take control. The peoples to the north and west of Israel during that time were likewise saying, oh, golly, I need to take control of this. And after Solomon, the kingdom split and Israel went into a weaker period. And as Israel went into a weaker period, you find the dominance of primarily the Assyrians, but also the peoples to the north, known as the Arameans. So Israel was in this almost, you might call it, testing ground area, where Israel, in many ways, had to depend upon God and faith in order to survive. And with all of the people around her constantly seeking to dominate her, it became this struggle between these foreign, unbelieving peoples and the nation of Israel, whom God had chosen as his people. And so it was a natural thing in Old Testament times for people to struggle with these things and associate these things with sin and with evil and salvation. And so sin, evil, and salvation has a big role to play in not only the kind of larger world that Israel was in, but sin also played a direct role in Israel's relationship with her God. So for instance, God says through the prophets that he chose the Assyrians to punish the Israelites for their sinful acts of having other gods that they worshiped. And that he made these other people, the outside people, his instruments to, in a sense, whip Israel, like you might spank a child, for her sin, her mistake, her error. But the sin of the Assyrians was that they took advantage of this opportunity, and instead of just simply spanking Israel, they went on and they went to try to dominate Israel until God said, enough. And it was under Hezekiah that God said, enough, and the Assyrians were stopped dead in their tracks. And they had to recede back to their land. And while the king of Assyria, with strong promises and curses and so on, said, I will be back, it never happened. And Assyria would never be back to attack the Israelites. The Babylonians would come later. But the Assyrians would never be back because everything fell apart in the Assyrian world after the attack on Jerusalem. And historically, these are things that you can read about outside the Bible. So the Assyrians were stopped by God when they had taken advantage of the Israelites after God had allowed them some success in their military conquests against Israel. So Israel was very, very conscious and very, very affected by all of these things related to sin and evil and salvation. And you see this in the Old Testament in various ways. We talked yesterday about the fact that there is the hint in the Old Testament of some kind of primeval, that is, pre-creation fall in the heavenly world, in which Lucifer was cast out of heaven and took a large part, like a third of all of the heavenly beings with him when he was cast out of heaven. And there are just certain scriptures. I gave them to you yesterday, and you find some references to them in the New Testament as well that add to this suggestion of some sort of a primeval fall. But it's important to realize, generally speaking, you do not see in the Old Testament, and not really even in the New Testament, but we're talking about Old Testament, you don't see this as being the blame that is assigned for why there is sin and why there is evil and these sorts of things. Rather, what you see is just that this is a reality that something of this sort took place. But rather, in the Old Testament, you see the event that occurs in the Garden of Eden, and then you see how humanity falls further and further and further away from God and fellowship with God, and you see how God intervenes then and begins by calling Abraham, and then by calling Israel, and then by calling a person, the Messiah, to be an instrument of his, to be a blessing to the entire world. And when you read in the book of Genesis, Abraham is referred to by God as someone who is to be a blessing to the world. Through him and through his descendants, all the world will be blessed. That's what God says to Abraham in one of the promises he makes to Abraham. Israel was to be the instrument of God's blessing to the rest of the world, to overcome the evil that had gone out into the world as people moved further and further and further away from God. And then ultimately within Israel, it would come down to one person, the Messiah, who would be God's instrument of blessing to the world. Now, all of this is in the Old Testament. Yes, we understand Jesus is that Messiah. But in the Old Testament, it had already been developed that far. And so when we talk about sin, evil, and salvation, and later about the Messiah and eschatology, we have to remember that these things were already becoming developed and understood in the Old Testament period before you ever get to the New Testament period. Well, the origin of evil is one of those things that a lot of people want to talk about. And the origin of evil in the in one sense is solved by the Persian dualism. Now, this is not the biblical origin of evil, but in the, you might say, the larger world out there, many people look at Persian dualism as an explanation for the origin of evil, that there were two eternal, equal gods or supernatural forces, one always only totally good and incapable of doing evil, and one always only totally evil and incapable of doing good, who were essentially locked in an eternal battle for domination. And the presence of evil and the actions of evil in this world were a result of the actions of the evil force, and the good were the result of the actions of the good force. These two equal gods or supernatural forces that were locked in battle. The Old Testament doesn't really understand evil as explainable by any of these sorts of things, but rather the Old Testament looks at evil as something that came after creation. When God created the world in Genesis 1, after every day of creation, he looks at it and he saw that it was good. And so then that's the end of that day of creation. And so there's no sense in which there's a good God and a bad God or something like that. And when Adam and Eve walked in the Garden of Eden, to begin with, everything was good. Totally peaceful, totally fruitful. The water came up out of the ground to water the garden. They didn't have to work for anything because the trees gave their fruit and it was just right there for them. And so their job was simply to tend the garden, but not to have to raise the food and take care of the fruit and all of these sorts of things, because it was just given to them in the garden. But after creation, evil arose within the created order. And in the Old Testament, good is defined by God. And you remember in the New Testament, Jesus says to a person who says, "Good teacher," and Jesus turns to him and says, "Why do you call me good? Only God is good." This is a very Old Testament concept. God is the definition of what is good. And the absolute good in the world is what God says is good. And he is both the source of creation and the basis of good. Now, in the Western rational thinking, some people attempt to go on and say, so why did God create evil? God did not create evil. Evil basically came into existence as a challenge to God and God's good. The concept of evil that you see in the Old Testament is that it comes out of a heart and a mind that is drawn away from God. And remember, I said that the word Satan originally meant the adversary. And when in the garden you see the event that takes place between Satan and Eve, this is the adversary, the one who is set against God, who now turns Eve away from what God has said, and she follows that, and so evil begins to come into the world as a result, into creation, in other words, as a result of this particular act. And this is the origin of evil based on the Old Testament. Now, as I say, outside the Old Testament, there are these other kinds of explanations. In the Persian concept, evil is something inherent in nature, in creation. Creation itself, what you see and feel and touch, is, according to Persian dualism, evil and not good. And this is this idea was picked up in the early church and became a very powerful force that continues in many elements of the church to look at the world and everything in this world as evil. But that is not the story of the Old Testament. The story of the Old Testament is that this world and everything in it was designed to be good. And when used in its proper way, the way God intended, it still is good. And so people who choose to practice asceticism, okay, that's their choice. But it is not a necessity in order to have any kind of a relationship with God or to build an even stronger relationship with God. If we digress for a minute to the New Testament story, you remember that John the Baptist was essentially an ascetic. He lived out in the desert. He wore rough clothing. He ate a particular kind of a diet. And Jesus wore the normal clothing that everybody else did. He would eat and he would drink with various people, both Pharisees and what they called sinners, people like tax collectors and so on like that, that the Jewish religious world would not even have anything to do with. And people at one point even remarked about this, probably more than one point, but you see it mentioned in the Bible by Jesus. How they say, you know, John lived this way and the Son of Man lives this way. And the perspective of Jesus was that it is not necessary to live an ascetic lifestyle to be closely related to God or to avoid evil or something like that, because all that you need is to be rightly related to God and use this creation that God has made in the right way. And when you do, then everything will be okay. And this is the Old Testament way of looking at it. Well, there's a lot of different words that are found in the Bible, in the Old Testament, for evil. And one of the most common is the word ra, which is sort of a general term for evil. One of the things that ra includes is what's called natural evil. things like disasters and catastrophes and the problems of existence, where people might be injured or they might be left brain dead or they may be handicapped or something like that. In the Old Testament, these calamities are simply the result of a fallen world. These are not God causing them. And I've heard so many people say, well, God caused an earthquake. Well, can God cause an earthquake? Yes, of course. Can God cause a snowstorm that just wipes out an entire country? Yes, of course. But does God do that? Almost certainly no. Can it be? Yes. But is it? At least from the Old Testament, the answer is no. These are simply natural events, catastrophes, that are the result of living in a fallen world. They can have spiritual causes. They can be because of abandoning God. They can be because of sin. But most of the time, the natural events are not something caused by sin and evil. And you may remember, again, from the New Testament, the man who was born blind, this is in the Gospel of John, and the disciples say to Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents? And Jesus says back to them, neither, but that the glory of God may be made manifest. And then he heals the man. Well, the Old Testament concept is that these things are simply because we live in a fallen world. Can sin cause things like this? Yes. Does sin always have the responsibility, the guilt of causing this? No. And so these sorts of evil things, yes, can be a direct act of divine judgment. And that's certainly what was going on in Egypt in the 10 plagues during the time of the Exodus. But most of the time, this is not the case. In the case of divine judgment, whether it's direct action or God withdrawing from the people, the underlying theme in the Old Testament is actually always redemption. And the problems that occur allow one to see more clearly that there is a real God they need to turn to. And this is what happened in Egypt during the time of the plagues. Each plague, as I said before, was directed at one of the major gods of the Egyptians to just totally embarrass them. The ninth plague was the plague of darkness. Amun-Ra and the whole group of gods known as Ra were the sun gods, the gods of light and warmth. And for 3 days, Egypt was plunged into a darkness so thick, it was like you could cut it with a knife. Well, the idea was to show the people that, in fact, the real God is not Amun-Ra. And with each of the plagues, there were people, not Israelites, who moved and went to live with the Israelites, both to escape the plague, but then later would come out of Egypt in the Exodus and be absorbed into the people God had chosen. And the Bible clearly says that when the people left Egypt, it was a mixed multitude. It was not just all descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. There were probably Philistines, there were probably Libyans, and there were probably Nubians, and there were probably Egyptians, all who had left their homes and come to live among the Israelites because they saw God saving the Israelites from all of these plagues. And so even when there is a divine judgment executed with some natural catastrophe, there is an intentional redemptive element to that in the Old Testament, encouraging the people to turn. God did not use the Assyrians just to spank the Israelites for their unfaithfulness, but rather he was using them to turn the Israelites back to himself. And so always when there is the seeming evil, the ra that occurs, it is always actually accompanied by a message of redemption. Turn to me and you will live. And you will find fruitfulness and plenty and these sorts of things. And when the people would turn, then they would see that God would deliver them and they would once again see the goodness of God.